Hello.
Oh, I got that crisp audio. Very, very good tonight.
Ooh, I think it's because I'm on the Wi-Fi.
Oh, I jinxed it. You just got all you
Oh,
didn't get
did it
it's not bad quality, it clearly changed. It went from like high
again?
throughput to a few less bits in your voice. Bit
Because
rate crunched.
I went from speaker to AirPods.
Oh, well, AirPods it is.
Exciting stuff.
Linda, you're not in your normal place, I don't think.
I'm in Arizona.
Is that a song I'm supposed to recognize?
No.
Okay, well, I liked it.
Just
Great,
came
I
out
have
of
an
my
actual
mouth.
title for this episode then. I don't have to try and like spin one out of you being in Williamsburg again.
Yeah, coming to you live from Scottsdale.
What brings you to Arizona?
I'm at the Within Conference. It's a conference for women in creative leadership positions.
That's you.
And that's me. All those things are me.
Are you, has this conference started yet, or you just got there yesterday?
It starts in 1 hour.
Oh yeah, because of time
So,
zones.
yeah, so I flew in this morning. I got up at 2 a.m. Arizona time, and it is now 4 p.m. So I feel normal still, but I think I'm going to hit a wall pretty soon. And right now they're setting up the event, and it's being set up right outside of my little balcony at this hotel. So it's kind of cool. I can like watch the event that I'm about to go to get put together. And then I think I'm even going to be extra sneaky, and I'm going to like wait a little bit and watch as people filter in, see what they're wearing. And then look at this advantage I have. I
Then
can
one
like
up them, but just by
plan.
5%.
Right, just enough so that they know that I'm better than they
You
are.
want to be the best dressed person in the room, but not by a factor of more than 5 or 10%. Any more than that, you look preposterous.
Yeah, trying too hard. Come on.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice advantage you have. You also get to sit there and wait until the vibe of the social situation is at a good frenzy, you know? You got enough people there,
Yeah.
people are chatting, you don't have to walk into some quiet room with like six people milling around. You get to scope it a
Exactly.
little bit ahead of time.
Exactly.
Now, what happened if
Whew.
now what would happen if everybody was doing exactly that? No one would ever come out and no one would ever know what to wear. They'd all just be sitting on their balconies going, I guess it's not happening.
I guess then we would spot each other on our balconies and be like, oh, hey, want to hang out?
There you go. Are
Come to
you just
room
attending this conference, or are you
228.
speaking or paneling or something?
No, I'm only attending at this conference. It seems like a lot of really important people are here. Like somebody from Martha Stewart is here.
Actual Martha Stewart or somebody from Martha
No,
Stewart's
like somebody from
company?
her entity.
Right.
Yeah. And then just like a lot of tech people, a lot of Google folks and Facebook and the usuals. It'll be interesting. I don't think I've ever spent this much time concentrated with a group of women.
Ever in your life?
I genuinely don't think so.
Because you've always
Because
had like male friends growing up, right? That's kind of one of your vibes.
yeah, and I'm thinking back, like the summer camps that I went to were co-ed, and even like the churchy camps that I went to were co-ed. So yeah, I think I spent a lot of not a lot of time around just women, and I wonder if I'm gonna learn
You never
something
like
about
played a
myself.
sport and had like a sports team with a bunch of women that were like in your community?
Well, yeah, but we didn't do a lot of overnight trips together or anything.
Wasn't a travel
Yeah.
team.
No, we weren't that good. I'm very happy that you thought I might be, though.
You're fairly athletic. I could see you playing a sport and being on a travel team.
I'm really bad at sports, though, because I don't care enough, and I think that frustrates other people.
See, my problem is I care too much.
Oh, Andy.
No, it's not a sweet thing. It's like an over-competitive thing. I'm not saying I
No,
care
like
too
I
much about
freak
like,
out.
stray puppies or whatever. I care too much about getting the
Right.
basket in the hoop more times than the other team, damn it.
Like you bit a guy's ear off
That's
that
me.
level.
No, I've never
Nice.
done that. My anger is all focused inward. It's always focused on me, never my
Oh.
teammates. But it is a
Oh.
righteous anger. I
That's
actually
how
I got like
you.
no sleep last night. I woke up at like I went to bed at 10, which kind of late for me, and I woke up at like 1:30. I've been awake
Oh
ever
my
since and could
gosh.
not get back to sleep.
What?
I had a weird very strange anxiety dream wherein I was on a hockey team, which never really happened when I was a kid. I played like roller hockey for a couple seasons, maybe, but I was never on an ice hockey team. Anyway, in my dream, I was on an ice hockey team and I was like high school aged and we were competing in like the regional championship finally thing. And I've always played defense in all the sports that I play. I don't know what that says about me.
Me too. But, yeah, me too.
I always felt like I wanted to be reactive, not proactive on on the sports field.
I like to scream, like, get out of my house. I like to say stuff like that.
That's you not caring enough? You care enough to trash talk, but not enough to kick good or whatever?
Yeah. I'm in it for the fun parts.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, like, chase after the ball, though.
Anyway, in my dream, I was a defensive player on the team. And just like in real life, I was like a middling player. Whenever I played competitive sports with other competitive people, I was always like maybe like C plus, you know, like maybe one of the better defenders, but not good enough to be playing midfield or, you know, striker. These are all soccer things. Same was true with basketball, though, or whatever. Anyway, in my dream, they were like, all right, we're going into the big game and we got an exciting announcement to make. Andy has volunteered to be goalie. And I was like, what? And the goalie was like, cool, I get to go do something else. And I was like, wait a minute, I don't think I'm going to do good at goalie. And in my stress dream, we never played the game of hockey. It was just me being stressed about having to be the goalie.
Oh, and my God.
It was like, all I remember is thinking, when they shoot it at my head, I'm going to instinctively move my head away. I don't have time to train that instinct out of me before the game.
Right.
And I was very stressed. I woke up stressed about a fictional hockey game, and then I just couldn't get back to sleep.
Right. But it sucks because you're trying to get back to sleep, so you're actually prolonging that lucid state even longer, thus continuing the nightmare. But now it's a living nightmare.
Yeah, well, then I laid in bed. I laid in bed and I thought about all the actual sports experiences I had growing up. And I actually thought about talking to you about it. I was like, man, I'm going to be exhausted for the podcast. I'll probably have to explain to Linda why I'm so tired. And then I like ran through the script of like how I would talk about it because that's what my brain does. And then I couldn't get back to sleep.
Wow.
And eventually I turned on Desus versus Marrow, which is not the best podcast to fall asleep to. They do a lot of yelling.
Oh, that's no good.
Anyway, that's me.
I'm so sorry about your restless night.
Oh, it's fine. I made the mistake of drinking some wine last night.
Oh, is that what does it?
That's a contributor for me. If I was definitely not drunk. I had like a glass of wine. Didn't even really feel it.
Yeah, but for you, that's like a kegger.
But yeah, a glass of wine means that sometimes I won't sleep.
I've had that before too.
It's cruel. It's cruel.
What were you doing on a Sunday night that involved wine?
Oh, we have our Sunday family dinners with our neighbors, which we do every Sunday. This one involved wine.
Man, you're really getting crazy.
That's his life. Yeah, I know.
You're changing. Marriage has changed you.
I tried to relay your theory of it takes a little time, and then it hits you that you're married, and that's your person to Hillary, and she did not understand. She was like, what do you mean? I don't get it. Are we not, you don't feel it yet? I'm like, well, no, never mind. You don't get it.
Yeah, it's okay. Just give it a few months, and then get back to me.
It was hard to communicate.
It is a difficult thing to communicate. You're like, no, it's like a feeling. It's just like a,
What have you been feeling, Linda?
I've been feeling all sorts of stuff. I feel really good right now. I feel like I took a really awesome turn post-breakup last week. I had a really good therapy session. I feel like I'm on the upswing. Yeah, like I can see all of the light at the end of the tunnel. It's like quickly approaching, and I'm like happy about my new apartment that I just got settled into. I just spent the weekend camping with friends upstate.
That looked very picturesque and beautiful, by the way. That was like peak best life Instagram stuff you were posting.
It really was. I mean, in reality, it was like 38 degrees and drizzling the entire time, which just makes everything a little damp. A little freezing, and like by the time you get into bed at night, we were staying in these yurts that don't have heat. Ours had a little tiny stove in it, but it ran out of propane, so it was warm for a minute and then not. And so you're kind of camping. It's like glamping, you know, like you're in a tent, but there's a mattress and You have to pee outside, but it's in an outhouse.
Oh, and peeing outside, not in an outhouse, is one of the great joys of life.
Yeah, except I'm not good enough yet at it to not pee on my pants.
Yeah, it takes practice.
I always get a little bit on like the ankles of my pants, and then you have to like pour Gatorade on it to pretend that it's not pee, and it's actually just like, whoops.
pretend that you're instead the most clumsy person. I spilled Gatorade all over my crotch again. Not again.
Crazy me. So that was a really fun weekend, but also, yeah, some sleepless nights for me because tossing and turning and rain and cold and all that stuff, but in such a good way. It was a very relaxing and refreshing weekend.
I like camping in the cold as long as you are properly prepared. Like, obviously, it's not fun to be freezing physically, but I think it's really fun to be camping when it's freezing outside and you got all your warm layers and a campfire going. That's like peak camping for me. I don't really like summer camping where you're just hot and sweaty forever.
Yeah, until screw eternity. That. Yeah, I've only ever done cold camping, actually. I've never done the super hot kind. And I really enjoy it. I love it.
Very cool. Did you know that I built some yurts in my day?
Really?
Yeah, I built some yurts.
What's why? Why though?
Have we ever talked about the month and change I spent in Idaho when I was in college?
No.
I went to college and I studied graphic design. Maybe you've heard of it. Mm-hmm. It's like the study of shapes and colors and how you can use them in the capitalist system to make people money. That's mostly what graphic design is.
All right. Makes sense.
So I studied that, you know, to make other people money. That was my main goal.
Is this your pitch that you give to incoming clients, by the way?
I'm a very convincing salesman, Linda. let me
tell
you.
Yeah, I can tell that you've really honed that one in.
Let me tell you. So I had a minor, though, which at my college were called studio concentrations in bookbinding. Mm. So I liked to make books because I always liked to make things in my hands growing up. Like, I was involved in like wood shoppy stuff in high school, and the bookbinding was like this perfect combination of make a thing with your hands with a like craft to it, and also maybe graphic design is involved and you can apply your passion to something other than the capital system. So yeah. I did like normal graphic design internships my sophomore year and the summer after my junior year. So my last summer before, real life, presumably. I decided not to do an internship. And instead, I got in touch with this guy named Jim Croft, who is a bookbinder in the medieval tradition. So like pre-printing press, pre-Gutenberg.
What do they use? Like sheep's lard?
Well,
glue it all
large.
Together.
So traditionally, the books were all on vellum or parchment or something. So like animal skin. But and then, you know, it's the book you would picture if you pictured the book that would be on the shelf of like some big castle or a monastery somewhere. You know, big giant book with wooden covers and like brass or bronze clasps and a big leather spine. And he's one of very few people left alive that know how to do it kind of from scratch. He makes books basically from total scratch out in the wilderness in Idaho. So he scrounges up old fire hoses to get all of the fiber out of them, because old fire hoses are made of good material to make paper. And he like goes and scrounges up pieces of wood in cut piles at these big logging companies and finds the good wood to use for covers for his books. And he just like lives completely off the grid and occasionally teaches a class or two from his property. And I just like called him up and was like, hey, can I come spend the summer working with you? And he let me do like a work trade thing.
Oh, wow.
Where I basically
spent... this wasn't even like he had a deal with your school. Like, you had to actively seek out this guy.
No, it's actually the person I was dating at the time actually had interned the summer before with a paper maker in Portland. And she met this guy at a like bookmaking fair in Portland or something.
Oh,
and
cool.
She knew that this was like the only book artist that I liked, because frankly, a lot of book artists are like either a very high concept, you know, kind of BS-y stuff, or they're kind of like scrapbooky, which is not my aesthetic, as you know.
Not my vibe.
So this was like one of the only guys where I was like, this is the kind of book that I would love to learn how to make, but it's, you know, you can't Google it. There's not very many YouTube videos describing how to do like a, you know, sewing on cords and like leather binding and how to like pick out wood for a cover. So anyway, I did a work trade with him and I spent like 4.5 weeks there, and during the day I would just split firewood and build yurts and like basically help run his property, because he's, again, him and his wife live completely off the grid. They have no electricity, no running water, no mailbox. They have to go to the town nearby to go to the P.O. box to get their mail. And they, like, wow, you know, weather the winter in northern Idaho, just, you know, out there in the wilderness. So they need to have, like, tons of wood stockpiled. So stockpile wood and stuff. And then at night, he would, like, teach me how to make books. And that was a really fun experience. And I got to build some yurts. And yurts are really cool structurally, because they're all, like,
yeah,
you've got the walls and you've got the roof. And it's all held together by this one, like, tension around where they join. Usually, like, a metal cable now for modern yurts. But back in the day, it used to be, like, rope or something. And it's just the fact that you, like, interlock those pieces and then, like, tie off that tension rod, and that holds the entire thing up, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I leaned against that rod at one point, and I was like, I think this is a bad idea.
This yurt made a noise. Not...
Yeah. Okay, so why did they have lots of yurts on their property?
Oh, they didn't have lots. They had two yurts. And okay, I was there for, like, 4.5 weeks leading up to a week-long workshop he was doing with, like, six people. It was a small workshop. But people were staying on the property, so I had to get the yurts set up for them in different places on the property before they arrived.
That is so cool. I did not know this fun fact about you.
Yeah, it was a real experience. I've gotten a lot better about this now. Frankly, since I've like been in a committed relationship, I've gotten better about this. But when I was in college, I could not handle being alone at all. I think I may have mentioned to you before that notoriously I used to like come home to our apartment where I live with three other people. And if it was like a Thursday night and I was getting back late from the studio or something, and it was like 11 o'clock and no one was there, they were all out partying or something, I would just leave and just walk around the streets because I couldn't be in the apartment alone. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't hang. Now, this is right around when I discovered podcasts too, which were one of the first like crutches for me to actually be alone, because podcasts mean you don't feel alone. And I'm not really entirely sure why. Like, I didn't grow up with a super busy household. I mean, it was like somewhat busy, but I only had one sibling growing up with me, and I don't know, I spent a lot of time at friends' houses, I guess, growing up. But anyway,
there's something really weird about your late teens, early 20s and that alone thing. I know exactly what you're talking about. I had to really face that when I was in my late 20s.
Really? You
this
too?
Is a different this is a different conversation, but I totally think that everybody should learn how to be by themselves before they get into a serious committed relationship.
Oh, so you're saying I did it wrong because I learned how afterwards?
Well, I think you're one of the people who did it right. But I think it wasn't until I was like alone for a few years that I was able to really actually know how to enjoy that. And then you enjoy like the person who you're dating, you enjoy their time so differently once you know how to be alone, because you're not like depending on them to be there for you and make you happy. It's just like, I could be alone or I could be doing this, and I'm choosing to do this because I like you.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah, and anyway. Hillary is very good at taking her space and being alone, because she's an only child, so she's used to that. So I kind of learned that from her a little bit.
She probably needs it.
Yeah, she does. And I think I've started to need it too. I really appreciate my alone time now whenever I get it.
Yeah. Anyways.
But yeah, it's interesting to hear you had a similar experience, because when I was in college, I felt like a freak because everyone was like, what do you mean you, what were you doing? I was like, oh, I was walking around the block a bunch at midnight because no one was here and I couldn't fall asleep in an empty house. anyway, so this, the experience for me going out to meet Jim, and here's another thing about me, which is weird. Like, I think you probably know, and anyone that's listened to this podcast more than a couple episodes probably has a sense that like, I kind of can't turn my brain off. I'm like a pathological like overthinker. I'm just always running through the permutations of all the things that could possibly be a thing in my head. But one thing I'm not very good at is like, I didn't really think about, like, I was like, oh yeah, call this guy up, talk to him once on the phone, and I was like, hey man, can I come make books with you? And he was like, yeah, sure, come on out, make some books, how about these dates? And it was like one phone conversation, and like maybe I think he sent me an actual letter in the mail. He sent me like a packet of things to read before I showed up. And that was it. And then I got on a plane, and the whole plan was for me to just to fly to Spokane, Washington, for this guy to just pick me up in his car.
Yeah, that's so far.
And
oh my God.
Literally, like, so I flew from Baltimore to Chicago and had a long layover in Chicago, and then I got on this little tiny plane that took forever to fly from Chicago to Spokane. And Linda, not until I got off that plane was I like, I'm about to get in the car with a strange man and just go into the woods.
Yeah.
Like it did not, of all the like overthinking that I do in my life, it never had occurred to me that like that might not feel great. And then
wow.
And then like I met the guy, and he's like, he's a hippie. I mean, he's like a back to the earth hippie kind of guy, but also like a blue collar hippie, right? Like he does not have much money.
Right.
Like they grow their own vegetables and stuff. Like he doesn't really shower. He's like a dirty dude. His teeth are all messed up.
Did you have some like alarm bells going off?
Yeah, I was like very freaked out. And I remember texting my parents because they told me to text them. And like we were basically going to get in the car and drive immediately out of cell phone service for 5 weeks. And I was just like, I texted him like, don't worry. I got like 30 pounds on him. I think I could take him. was what I texted them, which was not true because he was a beast. He was a very hardy man. But yeah, we got in his like beat up car and like drove off. And he like asked if we could make a pit stop somewhere. We made a pit stop to like see his friend who needed help with her like batteries because it's all very complicated. But he was like, went to stop help out his friend and they're like smoking a bunch of weed and he's almost like electrocuting himself with his battery system and like sun's going down. And I'm like, I'm like, what's going on? Like, what's happening to me? And then like, I was very uncomfortable for probably 2 of the 4 weeks I was there because like, everything about it was totally new to me. And also like, I was in some ways completely alone because I was going through an uncomfortable experience that I in no way could commiserate with this guy about because this is his life. I couldn't be like, I couldn't be like, wow, man, there's just ants in your food. And that's like a normal thing. And like, I couldn't, there was, and
like,
I didn't,
this sucks, right? Right.
I just remember thinking if I could have like texted somebody and had them respond and be like, wow, that's wild, that I think I would have felt a million times better. But it was really pretty intense for me for a little while.
I had a really similar experience to this.
What?
And I don't want to like trample on your story.
I want you to
Okay. talk. So this was a person that I did know. I have an uncle who lives in California, but he's kind of like, he moved out of my grandparents' house when he was 15. So he ran away from home. He was in a punk band. He surfs and skateboards and like, he's just like a super awesome guy. And he started this punk band in the 80s. They're still playing, Andy. Like, they still play. The same people.
Doing it for the love of the art. Do it for the art.
Oh my God. They're like true punk band through and through. But anyways, like, I remembered meeting him a few times as a kid and always thinking that he was really cool. And I kind of like really wanted to just be like him because, you know, I had these preacher parents and I was just living this really sheltered life in church. And so there was this one spring break in like my junior year of high school where I asked my mom out of the blue, hey, do you think instead of doing spring break stuff this year, I can just go visit Uncle Scott? And I hadn't seen him in probably 9 years at this point. Like, he wasn't a part of our daily lives at all.
Just like, I want to do that.
Yeah. I don't know why. I was like, he lives in California. I want to see what California is like. That sounds cool. And so she said, okay, sure. And so we found like the cheapest flight out there, didn't even have a return flight home, and they just let me go. And so I had no idea what to expect. And this is what made me think of this story, because when he picked me up from the airport, like, he smelled like booze. Like, he might have been like partying from the night before. My flight got in kind of early.
Yeah.
And he was like an hour late to picking me up. And he was just like, you know, Otto from The Simpsons, like the school bus driver.
Right.
That is totally my uncle. He's just like, hey, dude. And so I'm like, oh my God. Okay, here we go. And he's driving all crazy down these little roads. And then he's like, we got to make a stop. And I was like, what? And he's like, we got to get a new shitter. And like, we go to this Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever it was. And one of his like punk rock roommates was there picking out a toilet because apparently their toilet had broken that morning. And I had been holding it since I landed and like had to pee really bad and was just so confused and like didn't even know how to take care of my own bodily functions and like find a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had this whole conversation about how it's way more comfortable to like squat when you're going to the bathroom, and they like
that
intentionally, which is another conversation in of itself.
Well,
but they they intentionally picked out a very low toilet so that they could have the comfort of squatting. So all of this, and I'm 16 years old, and with these I think they were like in their mid-40s at the time.
Yeah, okay. I was like, just going to guess.
Yeah. These like 40-year-old punk dudes. And then I just spent the whole week with them, or like a week and a half or something. And we ended up driving down to Mexico at one point. And then he like went to go tour with a band for a few days. And he just left me with his van and I like drove myself down the coast. It was amazing. But it was also a little crazy, and there were a few parties that they had at their house while I was there that I was like, people are drinking and smoking weed, and like, this is everything that my parents don't want for me.
You're basically like, I don't think my parents understood the score when they said I could come out here, because
right,
they probably would not
exactly
be chill with this.
But I'm very grateful for that experience.
It's very funny you bring up the squatting when you're going to the bathroom thing, because this was one of Jim's, like, he talked about it constantly. This guy is pretty much convinced that the like flush toilet is like one of the banes of civilization, which
wow,
he has a lot of compelling arguments for, though it also solves some very important problems that need to be solved when you're living in the density that modern cities allow. But but no, he was like a big adamant proponent. He was always like preaching about like, you always want to be squatting. Let me tell you why. And he would like explain, and it was one of the big things.
Oh, wait, is he one of those people who believes that like a lot of our modern medical problems are because of this? Like, that's why people are getting like cancer and stuff?
You know, he never got too tinfoil hatty with me when okay, I was out there. It was never like, I didn't give a sense he was like an anti-vaxxer or whatever. But
right,
he definitely has a healthy skepticism about the like status quo of civilization. And one of the ways
yeah,
it manifested is his loathing of flush toilets.
Flush toilets. I like that.
Yeah.
I like calling them flush toilets. You know what? I really like a flush toilet.
Yeah. You know, they've got some real big pros. But
yeah,
I will say, I mean, his outhouse, he had a squat outhouse, right? So it's just an outhouse with a hole in the floor, essentially, which took some getting used to. I mean, talk about peeing on your pants. The first time I went out there, I was like, how do I? I was like, if my pants are at my ankles, then the ankles are directly under the zone.
Right.
So like the first few times I was out there, like taking my pants completely off. Eventually I figured out you're supposed to just pull them down to your knees, which is the science.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Took me a little bit to figure that out. But
I feel like there still would be some residual whatever. Okay. Go on.
It can be done. I mean, assuming you have pants that are not like super flowy. You wouldn't be pulling this off in your big parachute pants. That would not be advisable.
Yeah, that would be bad. Okay.
But no, like he has this like picturesque, and you know, he's got the kind of outhouse where it's facing away from the property, and it has no doors or anything. It's just like a, you know, three walls and a ceiling. But it looks out of this picturesque forest, and I don't know, some one of the nicest places to go to the bathroom still to this day, I think. It took a little getting
amazing,
used to, but ended up being pretty great. But yeah, so I was one of the other things about it is like I talked about my accommodations. He lives in a little cabin he built for himself, basically, him and his wife. And I should note, for the first like 5 days, his wife wasn't there. She was out doing something and arrived back later, so it was literally just me and this guy I had just met. And
In his cabin?
So my sleeping accommodations we had established were going to be this treehouse. He's like, I have a treehouse I built. People stay in it all the time. It's great. You'll love it. And I was like, cool. And so we arrived at the property well after dark because we stopped, you know, and helped his friend with her battery and, you know, drove around for a while. He's not close to Spokane. It was probably like a three and a half hour drive. And he's like, all right, well, treehouse is out there. He just like points to the pitch black, deep Idaho woods in the middle of nowhere and like hands me a flashlight. And this treehouse is like, I don't know. I mean, it feels like a lot of, if I'm being realistic, it's probably like 100 yards from his cabin.
Right.
It's like not actually that far, but when it's 100 yards of like semi-dense woods, it feels like a super long distance.
Oh, yeah.
And then I get to this treehouse and it's got no walls. It's a platform with this roof over it. And so like I'm just out there. And Idaho's
what?
Yeah. And I mean, I should like state all this stuff. I was uncomfortable because of what I was used to. It did not meet my expectations, but all told, it ended up being a very comfortable stay once I got used to things. Like it was very nice accommodations. I mean, it's pretty cool to sleep in a treehouse in the middle of like the canopy with like nothing around you. In Idaho, it gets cold enough at night that there's not bugs really. Like they don't have many bugs in northern Idaho, so there was no like mosquitoes or anything, no bugs. I did wake up a couple of times with squirrels on my bed, like looking at me. But yeah, I just like the pure terror I felt like walking through the woods. As a grown man, right?
Gosh.
Like I was probably, I guess, 21 or something, 22 maybe. And the pure terror I felt walking through the woods to like go out to this treehouse where I was going to stay for 5 weeks is like still something that I can remember very intimately.
Can you imagine if that happened to you now? Like if you signed up for something and it turned out that it meant you were going to be in a treehouse in the woods for 5 weeks, like would you just go, all right, this is worth it. This is fine.
Well, this experience definitely made me more, I won't say it like hardened me, but it made me more tolerant of things I thought I otherwise wouldn't be able to handle. Like, if you don't shower for like a month, the first week you feel gross, and then eventually you just don't feel gross anymore. And part of it is that I think you just get used to it, and part of it is that, you know, there's a plateau, right? You can't get grosser at a certain point. So like, I got used to that, and didn't really bother me so much.
So they didn't shower or have running water at all?
No running water. They did have like a, basically a bucket with holes in it that you could occasionally use as a, you know, shower, quote unquote. I didn't. I did go on a river once, which is a story in and of itself. So this is like maybe like six. Do you have time? When does your conference start?
Yeah, I'm good.
You good? You're scoping. What are people wearing? Are people starting to show up yet?
There are a few women out there, but not enough that I want to go and introduce myself.
Okay, will you stop me whenever?
I also just painted my nails while we were talking, so I need to let these babies dry.
Gotcha. What color?
A very nice mustard.
Ooh.
I had to say very nice because otherwise it might not have sounded
so anyway, it was like 5 or 6 days into this trip. And it was right when his wife got back. And she was a very lovely woman. And she was also, I think, more hospitable than he is. He's a super nice guy, like the nicest guy. I love this man now. But he's very quiet, and like, it's a certain type of person that chooses to live in the middle of the woods, in the middle of nowhere, and see people as rarely as possible. And he's not antisocial, but he just like, you know, he was like, here's your flashlight, start walking into the woods, you'll see a treehouse. You know, like, it was no, there was no hospitality whatsoever. And when Melody arrived, she was more hospitable, I think, which made me feel a little more comfortable. But I'm still in, like, fight or flight mode, basically 24-7.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was hardest for me is that they, like, have a well that they, like, go and pump water out of. And the water's totally clean to drink. I mean, as far as I know, they've been drinking it for 30 years, and they're perfectly healthy. But it comes out of, like, a well in the ground, like an actual in-the-ground well, not like a, you know, industrially made well. And so it's just got a bunch of dirt in it. Like, and so we would go in the morning and get 2 5-gallon buckets full of water, and it had like soil and dirt in it, and you couldn't see to the bottom of the 5-gallon bucket. It was like, that's how like murky it was. And that was what you drink. You just dip a glass in there and chug it down. And it took me a long time.
So it's all murky and...
Yeah.
Andy, this is crazy. I can't believe.
It took me, that was by far the thing it took me the longest to get used to. Like, everything in my body was like, you shouldn't drink that. And I was like, no, body, we have to drink water, otherwise we're gonna die. Water is important. And so for like the first couple of days, I was like closing my eyes and like choking it down and pretending it was something else, and eventually got used to it, but it took a lot. But so I'm in this mode where I'm like still very uncomfortable. I have not been able to text anybody that I know to even let them know that I'm having a time. And and at some point, like 5 or 6 days in, Melody and Jim are like, hey, we're going to a sweat tonight with some of our friends. We'll be out from like 4 p.m. until like probably 2 a.m. You're welcome to come if you want, but you can also just hang out here, or you can come. It's up to you. And I was like, ain't no fucking way in hell am I sitting on your like scary ass desolate property in the middle of nowhere alone for like 8 hours. Like, there's no way it's happening. I will fucking short circuit. I will have a panic attack and it'll be a problem. So I was like, whatever sweat is, I'm going. I didn't even ask. I was like, I'm going to that because there'll be people there. That's what I'm doing. And so we got in his truck, and he has a collection of, there's a particular era of Chevy pickup truck. I think if I recall correctly, it's like 51 to 53 that he is very fond of. And so he picks them up at like junkyards whenever he can find them, and has like 4 or 5 on his property, only one of which runs, but the rest of which are, you know, part surrogates to keep the one running. So like, you know, the fuel injector or whatever will explode, and he'll go over to one of the other trucks and unscrew it and screw it into the new one. And he really likes them because all the old trucks were like, you could still very much do everything with just like very simple tools. There was no specialized tools required. It was all like right there. You could just look at it and understand it, which is a big value of his. So we got him his old truck. We drove for a while to meet some of his friends, including the woman who we had helped fix her battery. And Jim has me come and help him start like a big cedar fire. So we started a big like campfire, and at the bottom of the campfire, we put these enormous, like, you know, kind of like brick shaped cedar logs, like not long and skinny, like big chunks of cedar, put at the bottom of this fire, and got the fire ripping and roaring as like the sun's going down. And what the sweat is his friend has like a sweat lodge. And what it was like a dome on the ground made out of like bent wood, probably like mm-hmm. 4 feet tall and 8 feet across, right? Like a half sphere. And this like bent wood sphere was just covered in, I mean, dozens and dozens and dozens of like wool blankets of various repair. Like this person, I clearly just collected all of the like dirty and destroyed wool blankets they could find and just layered them over top of this thing, and then it rained on it for years or whatever. But wool is antimicrobial, so it wasn't like moldy or anything. It was this big, right. like, you know, like this musty, like sphere, a half sphere. And so what we were doing was we were going to make these cedar logs really hot, put them in the middle of this thing, and then all get naked and then jam into this little tiny sweat lodge, and then do this kind of like a religious, like semi-spiritual ceremony where the owner of the sweat lodge goes around the circle and asks everybody to speak of whatever's on their minds. And if they feel moved by whatever the person says, they throw water onto the like big cedar logs. And we also had rocks at the bottom of the fire too. It was like a big cedar logs and these rocks that
oh,
got really
wow. hot.
So we'd throw the, you know, thing onto the hot rocks, and then the room would get a million degrees, and we did that for like 6 hours. And it was like all these like hippie friends of his. I mean, there's only like six
what?
Of us. But yeah, and I found myself in the middle of a sweat lodge, like with a bunch of
totally
hip,
naked.
Old hippies. Yeah.
No wonder you don't mind being naked in front of people.
This might have been one of the first times in my life I ever was. Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe like the first time. I can't actually remember, but it definitely.
Yeah, I feel like that'll do it.
Definitely the first memorable time. Yeah, and they're so all like.
Was it like sexual in any way, or was it just like
no, not
purely,
at all.
Yeah.
Definitely not sexual. I mean, first of all, they were all in their like mid-40s and 50s. Not that.
That doesn't mean anything.
Not that that means they're no longer sexual beings or anything, but no, it was not sexual at all. It was like this very like kind of solemn thing where we would just go from this super hot sweat lodge, and it was extremely hot. Like there were moments where I was like, I don't know if I'm going to pass out, but you know, I'm basically, there's only one entrance. It's a little small entrance, and you kind of like file wow. in, and there's no way to get out without making everybody else get out. So I was just like trying to scrunch my head down as low as possible because the air at the bottom is colder than the air at the top to like stay
right.
conscious. And then we would stay in there for
Holy
as long as we
shit.
Could, like a couple hours, and then we'd get out and go jump in this cold river and then go pile back in the sweat lodge again. And we did it like four times, like I said, until like
wow.
1 a.m., like midnight or 1 a.m. We just did that constantly. And yeah,
but did
it was,
they have water there? Did they have some
yes.
murky water to drink?
They had lots of murky water to drink. That was very essential. And there's like, you know, true hippies. There was like, you know, some of the women were free bleeding, which was a thing. That was something. But
that's good. Wait, so they just let themselves have their period, like
yeah.
all over or whatever?
Yeah.
And then like, do they clean it up or do they just like let it happen and that's that?
Well, the bottom of the sweat lodge is like hay. So you don't really clean it up.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's just the ground. So,
got it.
Whatever.
I didn't even know that term, Andy.
You've never heard of free bleeding?
No.
Oh. Huh. That's a thing people still do.
Really?
Yeah, especially at night. Some women do it at night. They just don't wear anything, and there's special seats you can get that make it easier to like wash. But yeah, it's a pretty common thing, I think. I mean, I don't say pretty common. I've heard of it multiple times from people that I know.
Googling.
Yeah, read about it.
Bleeding.
But yeah, I have a lot more stories about Idaho, but I won't keep you any longer
Hello?
Tonight. Did you lose me?
Andy.
Linda? Linda? Linda?
Hello?
Did you lose me? Let's call her back.
What happened?
I don't know. I think you Googled free bleeding and your internet connection shut down.
No, my phone was over on the bed. Crazy. Anyways, that's insane.
Yeah, I was saying that I have a lot more stories from Idaho. We can tease them out over many episodes because I don't want to keep you any longer
that.
Tonight. But it was a very packed 5 weeks of my life.
Yeah, and I feel like I want to know. I wish that I could go back and see all of the parallel universes that stem from you having that experience and not having that experience. Like, I wonder how much that shaped you without
That's
you.
It's something I actually think about, mostly because the alternatives for me that summer were going to be go work at some big-ish startup or tech company as a like graphic designer and, you know, network and like make inroads in the industry.
Right.
And I was like, nah, screw that. I'm going to go live in a tree for a while, which I'm sure had a big effect on. It definitely changed me a lot in a lot of ways. But even just that practical thing of like, I didn't go meet people from Silicon Valley or New York or whatever that summer was also something that I'm sure affected me.
Okay. I have one more question about
this. I'm here to answer.
What did you actually learn about bookbinding? Did you learn a lot, or
was it
so much of a shock? Because I feel like if it were me, I would be so shocked by like not being able to talk to my people and like being off the grid. Like, there's so much new stuff to adjust to. How do you even like pick up a new skill and all of that?
Well, part of it is that my means of adjusting, which is probably just a means of escapism, is to like dive really deep into something. So not only did I like learn a lot about bookbinding, but I also read like 4 books when I was out there, which was completely unheard of for me at that stage of my life to read any books. But they had a little library, and I was just like, I can never be alone with my thoughts. I must be constantly engaged in something. I learned a ton while I was out there. I could tell you all kinds of details. A lot of what I learned about what you didn't expect is he like makes or finds or maintains all of his tools. So I like made a bunch of bone folders, and I made a bunch of awls, and like learned how to like make and maintain tools. And I spent a lot of time sharpening things. He always joked that like 2/3 of all the things he has in his life are sharpening. He's always sharpening his axes and sharpening his splitting mauls and sharpening his knives and sharpening his planes and sharpening everything. So I spent a lot of time learning how to sharpen knives properly or semi-properly. I learned a ton while I was out there. It's actually, I feel like I have so few like capital R regrets in my life. And this is not truly a regret, but it's a thing that I still think about to this day. So I was out there for a month, and I should say he makes like on average 2 to 4 books every year. His books are like extremely time intensive, and the books take multiple years to make. He's got books kind of constantly in production. But, you know, he makes all of his own paper. He has to dry all of his own paper and press it. He has to, like, you know, slowly dry the wood he uses for the covers so there's no warping. And he has a series of drying houses of different humidities he uses to dry the wood out very slowly over time. And
are these books that other people have written and are commissioning him to make? Or is it just blank books?
So they're all empty with rare exception. When I was there, he was working on a book for – most of the books he actually sells because they're expensive because he makes – 2 of them a year, and he's like a peak artisan. Like, there's one woman in Germany at the time who was making like somewhat similar books and was of a similar like quality and craft. Most of the books he sells are some to like collectors, but it's obviously a pretty small collector market for that kind of thing. It was mostly to universities that wanted an example of a medieval bound book that they could show to their like people studying preservation and like the historical period, but obviously you can't like handle an actual medieval book because they're so precious and rare. So they would buy one of his books, which is like identical, except you can like pass it around the classroom and people can open it up and inspect it and learn how it's made and you know, do that kind of stuff with it. So when I was there, he was making a book, and part of making the book is he was documenting the process of making the book on the pages of the book itself for some university, I think in the UK, that wanted this for their collection. So he was handwritten notes. Most of them are empty though. And they're like thousands of pages because he's really thin paper, which is like the tradition. And they're big, thick guys.
Wow.
Should Google them when you get back to your computer.
Yeah. You should put it in the notes for this episode.
I'll do it.
Did he have an apprentice who taught him all of this as well?
Yeah. His life story is kind of very interesting. The short answer is yes. He studied with a different woman in Germany that is no longer with us, that was a like medieval style bookbinder. And then a lot of it was self-taught for him. So his like love of books came from, he went on like the classic hippie sojourn where he like backpacked around Europe, after college. He actually like applied to grad school and got in, and then went to the first couple classes and was like disillusioned with grad school because he thought it was the wrong way to learn about the world. And so he decided to learn about it his own way, which was like backpacking around Europe and making his own kayak from a tree he cut down so he could kayak down the Thames. Anyway, he fell in love with this one book at whatever the like big historical museum is in London, whatever the equivalent of like the National History Museum in London is.
Yeah.
They had like at the time, you know, back in the 70s or whatever, they had a medieval book on display. And he loved his book so much that he like you know, camped out with his backpack and his tent, like, in a park nearby the museum, and for like 2 weeks kept going back to like learn how this book was made and like observe it and ask people about it. And that kind of like started his journey to like learning how to make these books for himself.
I feel like that's just called the British Museum.
It could have been it.
It's where like the Dead Sea Scrolls and shit are.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Cleopatra's there. That's so crazy. What a cool dude.
He's extremely cool dude.
And he's still out there doing his thing, huh?
Yeah, as far as I know, I check up on him every couple of years. I write him a letter very rarely. I've done it a couple of times since I got back.
But, amazing.
Yeah. He's a really cool
dude.
That's so
cool. Wow.
Okay, Linda. I'm going to go to bed because I've been up forever. All right. And I hope you enjoy your conference surrounded by women for the first time in your life.
Oh, my gosh. There's so many of them down there.
Are you, like, anxious about being around nothing but women?
I am. I don't know how to do that good.
What makes you say that?
I don't know. I feel like I don't speak the same language as women. I definitely speak dude quite well, fluently. but I don't speak normal woman. I meet women all the time who I think are great.
Know women.
I've heard of them. But I think in events like this, it takes me back to Silicon Valley and all of the things that all of the reasons I didn't feel like I belonged there. I felt like everyone like was raised with all of these social cues that I had no idea about. So I feel like I'm just constantly embarrassing myself and making people think I'm like a weird redneck idiot person. But that's just all my social anxiety.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Well, you're going to do great.
I'll just drink this whole bottle of wine that is sitting in my mini bar. That'll make it better, right?
Is it a mini bottle of wine or is it a normal size bottle of wine?
It's one of those cute little bottles. It's really
that
cute.
That seems fine. I think you can probably chug that and be okay.
Okay. To show up with like a red mouth. Hey, ladies.
Yeah, I don't want to enable you, but that sounds like a reasonable amount of social lubricant, if that's the thing that helps you.
Yeah, what's up, friends?
But you don't need it. You're going to do great no matter what.
I'm going to do great.
You're all very charming.
I'll report back next week.
Looking forward to it. Enjoy your conference.
Thanks, Andy.
Bye,
Thanks
Linda.
For the cool story.
Oh, that's what I'm here for. I do my best.
All right. Bye, buddy.
Bye.